worked on the reserve when I was a baby till I was four.
Yeah.
And then I lost everything that was shown to me as a child. There was a few things that I kept. They used to call me Christmas Carol. They call me anything. I got used to it. The funny thing with that was the more I was called a dirty Indian or whatever it was
yeah.
they called me, I'd say, yeah, that's what I am. That I said, your parents taught you your manners well, and that used to bump them more because
yeah.
I agreed. Every time they try to hurt me, I would agree. And even today, I still agree. Sure, if they want to call an Indian person down, I'll agree. I'll say, sure, they're nothing but a bunch of this and a bunch of that. They get so mad at you because you agree. They don't have nothing else to say. That's
not
what,
me.
I'd
put my chip on my shoulder. That's what I'd do.
My grandmother had always taught me, if you want to carry it, any name in life, if you got to carry that name in life, carry it and be proud.
Yeah.
If you argue back with them, you're only going their way. If you make them feel like 2 cents by
yeah.
agreeing with them, then agree with them because they know how it feels, then they'll stop.
Yeah.
That's what I was taught like
yeah.
by my grandmother. Anyway, I'm gonna have to ask all over your name, your date of birth, the place. The reason why we're asking your birth is because we wanna show the difference between the ages of let's say we want the grandmother, the daughter, the granddaughter, and so forth. And we want to see how long generations keep the beadwork or whatever it is they're doing. So could I have your name?
My name is Lillian Williams.
And your address, Lillian?
1898 St. Clair Parkway, Sarnia Indian Reserve. N77H5.
Okay, your home phone number?
337-5931.
And your date of birth?
July 5th.
I know I'm not supposed to ask this. It makes me feel bad, but it's just more or less to show the difference. If you don't want to, that's fine.
1913.
Okay.
I'm an old girl.
And your place of birth was Sarnia?
Sarnia Reserve.
And your band membership, we don't need the card number, but what type of native person, like Ojibwe, Chippewa, Delaware?
Oh, Chippewa.
Type of craft work that you do. We're calling it craft work because it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, well, I do beadwork.
Anything else?
And I work on
you do leather work?
Yeah, I do headbands and necklaces and the medicine wheels. And Indian dresses for what the girls use for dancing. And Indian shawls. No, you going to do my daughter too?
Yeah, we'll do her after you.
Oh.
Okay, we already did that one for just the form.
All right.
Okay, so this is going to be for the...
All right.
Okay, the questions? Okay. What crafts do you do? This is for the paper itself.
Oh, just bead craft and a little bit of leather work.
And I understand that you're doing
Indian
medicine wheel.
Yeah, medicine
wheel.
Can
you explain? You can't explain.
No, I have it on the book, and I didn't get the short abbreviated form for it.
What crafts is more important to you? What out of the craft work that you do, what is really important to you, and why?
The important part of what I do is to make something that somebody would like, and if they ordered, I make it according to their, what they want, and that's my satisfaction, doing something for somebody, what somebody likes. It's more of a hobby than way of living or something, whatever.
What about the craft work that you do? Is it made for powwows? Do you sell it at powwows?
I sell it at powwows, and I sell it at home. And I used to go and sell at the farmer's market. And wherever I get invited to go and show what I have, and with the possibility of selling it, then I go.
And who taught you? Who taught you to do this type of craft?
I taught myself.
Why did you want to learn?
Well, I didn't have the money to buy an extra choker for my daughter when she broke her choker. The beads fell on the floor, and she was getting ready to go to a dance. And she had it. I had bought the costume for her. I made the dress, but the extras I'd bought for her, and she broke her choker and. The beads were on the floor. None of my needles would work to pick them beads up, to put them back. And it was just by accident. My daughter-in-law came down, and I told her, I said, I can't fix Susie's choker. I said, she's got to have it to wear when she goes dancing. She said, oh, I'll lend you a needle, what you can use. I said, do you have to have a special kind of needle? She says, yeah, I said, to pick the beads up. I said, I tried sewing needle. I said, they don't work. So she went home and got me a needle, and I looked at the rest of the pattern on the choker, and I picked the beads up, and I set them all there, and I followed that pattern, and I fixed that choker. And I looked at it, gee, that looks easy. I'm going to get some beads and see if I can make one. And there's where I got my start. Just by accident that I'd started. Another thing too, I had a nervous breakdown back in 1970. My doctor told me I couldn't do any heavy lifting, no heavy work, and I'm not supposed to do anything strenuous. I said, what am I going to do with myself? He says, well, he said, do a lot of reading, and you can do a lot of music, play your piano. And I said, That's not enough. He said, I'll take up a hobby. I said, well, I do sewing and cooking. He says, well, you'll come across something. You will find something. He said, because you have a strong mind to do something. So that's what I did then. I took up beadwork. It more as a hobby, as a filler in for something to do. And then I became so interested in it, and I just bought more beads, and now I've got a good trade.
What do you get out of it from doing your work? What do you feel inside of you?
Satisfaction that I made something that somebody liked and could use.
What does your family think and feel about?
I don't know. They help me out. They clear out of my way when I want to do beadwork. And then they take me to go and order. If I have to send an order in, well, they take me to the post office to go send in my order, or they take me to go and buy the beads.
Is there no place for you that you can go?
Just a few. You can just buy a few pieces up at the hobby shop, but other than that, I have to send a mail order. I have been getting them. through a mail order place.
What does the Native community feel about your work, and how do they show what they feel?
Well, if something goes on and they want to show, Indian craft, I get invited to the meetings. So they think something of what I'm doing.
Do you ever teach in schools with
local? Oh yes, I've taught the schools. I've taught the Indian children here. I've taught in schools in Port Huron, Algonac, and in Sarnia, and right on the reserve here.
And what does the non-native community think and feel about your work? And can you tell me how they respond to your work? Like the white people out there, what do they think of
it? Well, they admire it. They think a lot of it, and sometimes they buy my work.
Has the craft changed since you began, like the material or the designs, the symbols or the colors? Have they changed any?
Oh yeah, there's a lot more types of beads to work with now than when I first started. Maybe I just wasn't acquainted with them or something. But there's not as much work done on the looms as there used to be.
Now, when you do your craft work, I'll say bead work because it's something. When you do your bead work, the designs that you put on there, do they have a meaning? Or is it just something that's, it comes from here and it's on there?
No, not really.
What about your colors? Do you know the meanings of your colors? Or
no.
There's certain meanings to certain colors.
No, I didn't know. I didn't know about the colors.
Because the black, red, and the white represents the Chippewa or the Ojibwe Nation.
Where does the yellow come in?
And the yellow, red, and green is the Bear Clan colors, and when they put them all together, you got the Bear Clan plus the Ojibwe colors all together. Did you want me to write that? I can write that down for you before we go.
All right.
Okay. I've also got some colors I can send in to you.
I didn't know that.
And the black, red, and white are the Ojibwe or Chippewa colors. And also need some of the other colors, the other meaning. And how to find your colors, I'll explain that after we finish.
I have that somewhere on a. I have so much literature on Indian craft, and I have it someplace where the colors coincide with the elements.
Yeah.
They coincide with the elements. The red is power,
mm-hmm.
and white, purity and hope.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget what about the black. I know I had it down someplace on the.
I don't know if it's spirituality. I can't remember offhand. Do you recall any traditional stories that speak of Native women's work, like the craft work or the work that
you
do? You've never heard
no.
of What types of crafts
Hi.
Do you? Hello.
Come on in.
Hi. Hello. Hi.
This is Carolyn Oliver.
Hi, I'm Ramona Jackson.
And my sister from Port Huron.
Powwows.
Yeah, she was dancing on Sunday.
Well, I just...
In the last dance.
Yeah, I go to powwows all the time. Hit the powwow trail.
I like that too. What types of crafts do you remember when you were younger that are being done today, that aren't being done today?
When I was young, and up to the time that my daughter started to dance, I never come in contact with any Indian craft of any kind. I wasn't taught. We weren't taught anything. In fact, I never even... To tell the truth, when I started school, I was 8 years old when I first went to a white school. And then the kids were teasing me. When the teacher would compliment me on my work that I was doing, and I was doing good, they'd say, oh, go back to the reserve, you old Indian. Go back to the reserve. And I'd look at them, and the teacher says, sit up here, Lillian. So I went sat up near the front, and she says, don't pay no attention to them. So I didn't. But then when I went home for my lunch hour at noon, I told my dad, I said, you know, I says, the girls were arguing at school at me today. And he says, arguing about what? I said, they told me to go back to the reserve. They called me an old Indian. I said, what's an Indian? He looked at me. I said, they call me dirty old Indian. I said, what is a dirty old Indian, Dad? I had never heard the word Indian when I was on the reserve. Occurred to me that Indians were different from white people, but when I did start school, I noticed that the people were all white, and I was a different color. It never occurred to me that I was Indian. I didn't know why my color was different. But he says, just ignore them. You're there to learn. Pay no attention to them. So that's what I did. But it seems strange, you know, that I was never in contact with any anything that pertained to the word Indian.
I was 14 when I found out I was Indian.
Well, I was 8.
And I was watching TV, and they had a couple's Indian show. I was sitting there, and I was saying, kill the damn Indians. And my mom came in the kitchen, and she says, shut up. She says, you're Indian. And that's how I found out I was Indian. I knew I came from a reserve. I knew I was different, but I didn't know who I was.
It's funny, they never tell you that. They don't tell the children. They just take it for granted.
I know. I think when my grandmother used to talk to me, she would always say, it's not important who you are, as in Indian, white, Chinese, or black, or blue. It's important to know inside.
What's inside?
So I had never come in contact with prejudice till I was about 18 years old. And I couldn't deal with it. Couldn't deal with it. I had a very hard time. And I just came back. I call it to the circle when I was in my 30s, when I just turned 30. I came back, I taught myself how to dance, taught myself how to do beadwork. I was about 14 when I came in contact with beadwork. By the time I was 18 or 19, that's when I started teaching myself. I had a woman teach me 3 stitches, and she said, that's it, you're on your own. And from then on, I've been teaching myself. I never worked with hide before. I'm starting to now. And I'm very scared of it, because I'm scared that if I make a mistake, it's going to ruin the whole thing.
No.
But I've seen work, and people say, well, the only way you learn is by those mistakes. And it's just like everyday living. The only way you learn is by your mistakes.
Yeah.
So now it doesn't scare me.
Yeah, you profit by experience. Well, that's my work with the Indian.
The only thing they don't do today that they did a long time ago is make baskets. Isn't it? Nobody makes baskets around here no more. That's something that was, that I remember as being Indian when I was a little child, was the basket making, and now they don't do that no more.
I made baskets after I got married.
What type of baskets were you making?
Market baskets and sewing baskets.
Black ash. Was it black ash?
Made from black ash and white ash. I had to learn. I had to help my husband, you know.
I have always thought baskets were made from black ash. This is the first time I've heard something.
Oh, yes. They even make baskets from soft maple.
I remember my grandmother doing that with maple.
Yeah, with soft maple they make baskets. They make the splint, the layers of splint. But mostly we work with white ash because there's no black ash trees around this area. Mm-hmm. And I learned to make baskets from my mother-in-law.
Have you taught any of your daughters?
No, because we can't get the splint anymore. I would teach them if I could get the splint.
There's a woman on Waffle that's doing it.
She still do that Armatinger?
I don't know. I'm trying to get a hold of her.
Somebody told me she doesn't make them anymore. She's getting old.
But I don't
know
if she does or not. She must have taught somebody, though.
I don't know.
We had a class in that one time, and I thought, all day it took me to make one little basket about that high and about that big around. I thought, if I had to make a living on making baskets, I'd starve to death.
I used to make three baskets a day, the sewing baskets, with the covers on them.
I think they do beautiful work.
Do you feel that the craft work, the bead work, is dying out?
It is, and it should be taught to the younger people to carry on the tradition.
What can be done to keep it from dying? Like,
well, I think to keep it going, you have to have somebody that's interested in it to continue. And those that know it should teach somebody how it's done.
I'm gathering people slowly to set up one big project for 1 year, and hopefully I'll be getting the money in for all the work that has to be done. Like the beads will be free, everything that's going to be used will be free. And what I want to do is gather the people that really know what they're doing, not somebody that's just putting it together right now, but somebody that's had some experience to really show, you know, these people to keep it. Because a lot of people say, no, the beadwork is not dying out. But it is, because only beaters know how many.
I know, because the looms, people don't work on looms like they used to. Everything was loomed at one time.
I'm working on looms. But I want to try it the other way, where they have the string from the tree, where they put the string right down from the tree and you work coming down this way rather than going up this way.
I've never seen that done where you go up. I've always come down.
Yeah, I've seen it where they're coming from the top to the bottom. I've seen it done by this old woman, but she does it in a way. It's different. It's totally different.
And then
it's done loosely.
And then I've done hair ties, pair of hair ties, together on the loom. Use half the threads for one hair tie and the other half for the other hair tie, and I get them done that
way.
Do
you ever split it?
Yes.
Like in the middle?
Yeah.
I've got a pair of hair ties that I had just done, and I wore them on the weekend, and they were split, and they had the long white feathers. I don't know if you've seen them yet. I had sort of a